Support of KQED's podcasts is provided by Stitcher Radio for the iPhone and BlackBerry. Public radio programs and podcasts are available on demand with the Stitcher app. Stitcher is smart radio for your smartphone. The Stitcher app is available at Stitcher.com.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Capital Notes, our weekly look at California politics and the state budget and the state budget and the state budget.
What else?
What else is there to talk about? I'm John Myers from KQED. That's Anthony Arthur Fonsorelli York. Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly. He's sitting here in a white T-shirt. I had to do it. You kind of got a Fonzie look going on.
Great. I don't have the Gavin Newsom hair, though, to go to make. That would make the Fonzie.
No. But
You didn't even comment on the
shaving?
Yeah.
You come in with a different look every time.
I do that just for radio.
You're kind of this...
I'm a cipher.
You're kind of a GQ stylish kind of guy where you're like doing this non-fashion thing. Anyway, this is not a fashion podcast. Let's not go too far down that line. All right, let's talk about the budget. You know, if you're not going to laugh, you would have to cry. So we're laughing.
We could do a little of both.
We could do a little of both. It has been a really hard to follow couple of weeks. At least in the sense of trying to figure out what at the end of the day is going on.
Right.
We didn't do a podcast last week. You were gone. You were actually in Malibu hanging out with the governor, apparently.
Thursday. Well, I was in transit.
You were missing in action, and so just like the state with IOUs, as I wrote online, we owe you, the listener, a podcast.
And we'll give you 3.75% more podcast in October.
October 2nd.
Yes.
The date that the IOUs come due. All right, well, so we won't go back too far back into ancient history of a whole week ago, but suffice it to say, while we were gone, the state began issuing the IOUs, a whole crapload of them. I guess I can say that. That's an impolite way of saying
it. What is the official dollar figure for a crapload these days?
I don't know. In the first four,
but you do.
In the first 4 days of the IOUs, from Thursday of last week through Tuesday of this week, as we're sitting here at the week ending, it was $288 million of IOUs just in 4 days. We know it's going to be $3.4 billion for the month of July if there's no deal by then.
And if you want one, you can log on to eBay or
Craigslist.
Go get yourself one.
And I was going to say, and the other thing, too, is we don't really know what's going to happen after the end of this week about whether banks will honor them anymore.
Right,
Bank of America and Wells Fargo have not given any hint yet about whether they'll honor them next week. I think part of that kind of was a get your act together, elected officials thing. But, some of it, I think, could be a concern that the IOUs won't be cashed out in October, that they could go on beyond that. So who knows?
But I want to know, where else can you, in this day and age, with interest rates being what they are, where else can you get a 3.75% return on a three-month investment?
Well, if you're sure it's a three-month investment and you don't really need the money because, let's say, it's not your paycheck.
You're depressing me.
Then it would be great. Anyway, it's hard to get that, but it's hard. Everything is bad these days. So let's go through all the bad. All right. So this week, I don't even know what to say happened this week. We didn't have any formal action. We've had a war of words this week between the governor, primarily between the governor and Assembly Speaker Karen Bass.
Right.
But really between governor and the Democrats, the governor and his package of proposals that he says are reforms of social services programs and pensions, and the Democrats saying the governor throwing things on the table at the last minute, and we've gotten nowhere.
Well, I think what has happened is the real deadline for a lot of us were focused on, and I saw you there late night.
Yeah.
On June 30th was this deadline, the sort of stopgap measure, the Assembly. Republicans and Democrats passed a bunch of bills which would have put off the need to issue IOUs. Those bills sailed through the Assembly on a bipartisan vote and then ran into some problems in the Senate when no Republicans would go along and provide the votes to essentially buy us some more time. And since that time, since the first of the month, since that deadline passed, it really has that was a pivotal deadline, to sort of drive the legislature into action. And when that deadline came and went without any bipartisan agreement in both houses, it seems like we've kind of devolved a little bit over the last week. We've devolved.
Or a lot.
Yeah, we've devolved from the sort of sense of urgency to get something done and really devolved into kind of a more personal name-calling, political posturing sort of phase, which makes me think we're going to be here for a while.
Yeah, it does. I mean, because the only, you know, people have to remember, if you don't follow this all the time, you have to remember that this isn't a normal budget debate for a couple of reasons. One, it's a particularly difficult problem after we've done all of these deficit reductions in the last several months. But it's also not a full budget. It's a revision of a budget, in which case there is no constitutional deadline to get it done. There's no shutdown of this, or you can't do that, or these people don't get this. Really, what this is all about is about the state running out of money. And
right.
I long thought that if we missed that June 30th deadline, that we really would lose the incentive for a few weeks, because the IOUs have to go out and there has to be some impact across California before any of that comes back to the legislature feeling any heat. They don't feel the heat right now, at least. And they're going to take issue with when they hear me say that. But they don't seem to feel the heat enough yet, or
right,
to move off of where they are about the level of cuts, the level of other solutions that you get to.
And if there is another artificial deadline here, it's probably the end of the month when the next series of payments come due and the next wave of IOUs, which will be much larger than this current wave, when we really do run out of cash and all of our vendors go without getting paid. And when you run into the real question, when you get into uncharted territory about California not being able to make its debt payments and not being able to pay schools, and those are the two things which are at the top of the list constitutionally. And if we get to the end of July and do not have a budget in place, or some sort of stopgap measure, at least
a revision
in
of the
place,
budget in place,
right?
Yeah.
I think that's going to be the next, the next sort of crunch period. But I think for the next week or so, we're probably in this period of more politics than policy.
Well, and maybe we can deal with quickly, and we won't deal with it quickly knowing us, we can deal with quickly the intersection of the politics and policy this week, because when the deadline was missed, when the June 30, July 1st change of the new fiscal year went away without any solutions put in place, we lost about $3 billion in savings. And, we could sit and go backwards and talk about what happened and why the stopgap measures weren't passed. I do think when all of this is over, and even into the future, we're all going to look back at that as a hugely pivotal moment in this, because it made the problem so much harder to resolve. Because what came out of it was the governor proposing a suspension of Prop 98, the school funding guarantee, as the simplest, I guess, you might call it simple, you might not, which is the point we've got to talk about, but one of the simplest ways to get a larger amount of savings out of the budget after that,
right,
about a $3 billion suspension of Proposition 98. The trouble is, and this gets to your writing this week and others who have been watching it, the trouble is, as we know, is that it's not just about suspending Prop 98 and getting savings. It's about what happens to the level of funding for schools that is on the books for any given fiscal year. Because
right,
Prop 98, the formulas all depend on how much we funded in fiscal years. When we didn't cut it out of 2008-09, we have created possible problems in 2009-10 and years to come,
right,
definitely years to come.
And the real problem, what we're still waiting for from the Department of Finance is official numbers. As we talk now, we don't have official numbers from the Department of Finance about what the June revenues were. And the June revenues are important because they determine the June is the last month of the 08-09 fiscal year, the year that we just finished. We started a new fiscal year on July 1st. But those revenues, those receipts, that cash in hand, will determine the equation that is used to calculate the Prop 98 guarantee for 08-09, the year that was just passed. And this is what I wrote about this week. And this is a huge question. This is an $8 to $11 billion question that the governor and education groups sought to avoid through Proposition 1B on the May 19th special election ballot, which was defeated. And now it's a sticky fiscal and political question.
And I think we've said this before, we've talked about Prop 98. We have to be careful about trying to delve too far into the minutiae of the formulas.
Alienating even our five listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Five down to three, down to crickets chirping in the background.
And Rick Simpson.
Since we're going to get all... Actually, I was going to say, there's so few people who know how Prop 98 works, we could mention them both really quickly, or two or three of them.
Mochler, Simpson,
and
Chris Woods and Craig Cornett.
Take your picks, exactly. But the point here is that the numbers you're referring to, just to make sure that people understand what we're talking about, is we're talking about not only what the schools would get now, but what they might get in years to come to make good on money
right.
that Prop 98 supposedly says you get in certain years.
Paid back over time.
Yeah, right. And it seems like that the scenarios run the gamut as we sit here on Thursday afternoon, all the way from the schools would be owed nothing extra in years to come, to they'd be owed an extra $11.5 billion in years to come. And this is all about revenues, the way the formulas work, whether you created a future obligation or you didn't. And it's mind-numbing, except that it's the intersection with the politics, because education is such a powerful force. And the interest groups around education are powerful forces. This is a huge sticking point. I don't think we could make too light of this I don't think we could make too serious a point here.
Right.
Is that what I mean? Go ahead. Please.
Whatever. Either one is true.
Let me take a breather for a
moment. The question is moot. but I think you're absolutely right. And you know, I think it does. It is worth recalling that the CTA, the California Teachers Association, arguably the most powerful education lobby in the state.
Arguably be the most powerful interest group in the state.
And they joined forces with the Schwarzenegger administration. They endorsed the special election package on May 19th. And I think that there is some political sensitivity to that. I mean, this is, again, you know, when you're talking about formulas and numbers, it sounds very empirical and removed from politics. But I think, you know, my experience this week in trying to figure out what the revenues were for June, I think that the Schwarzenegger administration was intentionally a bit, for lack of a better word, let's say Clintonian in terms of their parsing of where we stand and not exactly forthcoming in terms of determining where we are in terms of hard revenues, because those revenue numbers have serious political implications for how these formulas are calculated and how much schools are owed and whatnot.
And policy implications for what money the schools have in these bad times.
Absolutely. And it's been difficult to get a straight answer out of the administration.
And I am going to guess that that's because even though in the real world someone would hear the word formula and think that it spits out an absolutely undeniable number, this is the way these formulas work, and the number that gets spit out is going to be part of the negotiations
absolutely.
Between the governor and legislative leaders.
I completely agree.
They will have to sit down and agree on a way to make the formula work.
Right. And
so anybody out there who thinks that you put these into a calculator and get a number no one can dispute, that's not going to happen.
No, and I tried this week in Capital Weekly to pin them down.
You tried
on a number and
fought the good fight.
And the legislative analysts, you know, the nonpartisan legislative analyst has their own set of numbers, which have been trickling out in the press. We have a number that we reported in Capital Weekly this week. They have their own implication about where we're headed, and the administration has been very reluctant to go there along with the legislative analyst. And so that sort of lends credence to your point that this is in part, at least, not just a formula, but a political calculation as well. Does anybody understand what we're talking about?
I don't know.
Can we take questions from the audience?
Let's go to.
Is there a call-in number?
Let's go to a caller from Sheboygan. That's my Larry King.
I know.
Tucson, you're on the air.
I went there too. I've got my suspenders.
You started leaning over the console.
That's right.
I want to back up just for a minute in the sense of how we got here and you know what could have happened differently. I mean, you know, we could play the woulda, shoulda, coulda game all day long, but there are just a few things that seem kind of baffling to me, because I don't know about you, but one of the things that I find particularly hard to get my head around as an observer of this place and not a participant in this place is how many times the same game gets played over and over and over. The same game plan, the same playbook about, you know, side, one side says X, the other side's going to say Y, you know, bills that go up in a certain form, a certain way for votes. You know, I'm somewhat mystified as to how that the game plan never changes around here. And the reason I bring that up is because one of the things that I've thought a lot over the last couple of weeks is about the governor's budget. Once that budget was put in place, and there were multiple little revisions after May 19th. There was the before May 19th budget revision, then there were the modifications to keep adding solutions, spending cuts, et cetera, et cetera. Right. But let's say, just for sake of argument, once we got to that once we got to the $24 billion proposal that the governor had out there, I've always wondered why the Democratic majority didn't put that budget up for a vote. Because it would have revealed a few things. It would have revealed where the governor's own party stood on some of those really deep spending cuts that would have affected some of the rural areas of California the most, some of the social services programs. It would have reflected where Democrats stood on it a little more sharply. And I think it would have it would not have allowed the governor to say the legislature didn't really move forward on anything here. They just kind of talked and did whatever. I mean, it seemed like it would have been a very clear way to say, Governor, we appreciate your proposal. It did not get the votes it needed. Now let's go back to the table. Instead, what we got was a bit of a, quite frankly, a muddled mess with the conference committee process, Big Five negotiations, everybody claiming everybody had some motive where they really weren't doing their work. You know, it just seems like the public would think, well, if the governor put a whole proposal out there, why didn't they vote on that?
And I don't know.
And this
is
just one thing. I have to be careful. This is only one thing versus a lot of things that could have been different.
There are PR professionals and pollsters who know better than I about
who get paid more than us.
And who know whether this is working or not. There was a story in the San Francisco Chronicle over the weekend that indicated that this standoff has actually been good for the governor's poll numbers. What that means, why that's important, what the hell he's running for next, I have no idea. But you know, I think the reality is that look, this doesn't help. this doesn't help anybody. And what has confounded me, and I think what I don't understand is look, I've heard a few conspiracy theories about what's going on, which are far too elaborate and detailed to get into here. But they don't really make a lot of sense when you take them out to their logical conclusion.
I think one of them involves where Jimmy Hoffa's buried.
But yeah.
Anyway,
there is. There's the Meadowlands, and allegedly. I don't know anything about that. But what's more disturbing than these conspiracy theories is the fact that perhaps there is none. And so, you know, we talked about this a little bit before we started recording, is what is the end game here? Does anybody have an idea how we're going to get out of this mess?
Right.
Does anybody even have a vision of what they want other than everything that they proposed, you know? And it just seems like in the last week we've moved further apart rather than closer together. And I understand the pattern of these things is such that sometimes it does get kind of blown up before it quickly starts to coalesce. But I don't get the sense that that's what's going on here. I just don't have a great amount of confidence in either the legislative leadership or the administration that they have a vision of where they want to be and where the common ground is.
But I guess the reason I used the example I did about the governor's budget is because I think that one of the reasons, you know, there's a common complaint that the public isn't dialed in, the public doesn't care, the public doesn't get it. That, you know, I'm not going to sit here and defend the, you know, that the public's breathlessly wanting to know what's happening with its state budget. But there's no clarity, you know, right, for the public to follow here. And I guess had there been a path forward at the beginning that had clear marks, clear debates, clear discussions, clear, you know, votes and things and whatever, then at least the public could say, ah, well, this happened, then this happened. Frankly, since the special election, what the hell happened?
Well, it's been
you really think about it. What happened over the last 6 weeks?
It's been a constant moving target. And again, this gets back into, you know, whether by design or just by happenstance, it's been a moving target. Certainly, if you take, you know, take as a fact, take assume that the administration, the governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, has the largest bully pulpit out of anybody else in the state, right? Anyone else up here in Sacramento. And think about how many revisions he's had since May 20th. He's come out with four different budget proposals. And there's another set of revenue numbers expected out later this week, early next week. This is a moving target, and I don't know whether that's by design, you know, to keep things confusing. And you know, if you accept this sort of Matir and Ross argument that this is all benefiting the governor somehow, or whether it's just an indication of just how messed up we are and just how confusing the whole thing is.
Well, and I subscribe to the latter. Yeah. I subscribe to the latter. It feels like controlled chaos to me sometimes in the Capitol about what's going on.
Where's the control?
Yeah, exactly. And barely controlled chaos. I mean, I have a hard time seeing that there's a grand design to it. And if, for instance, someone's polling on the governor's job approval ratings and they're going up, that's just got to be some unintended benefit from you know, however the public perceives it. I mean, it doesn't feel as though there's a strong plan here, you know. And you know, people talk about politics, you know, whether, you know, I think this year I talked about, you know, a poker game, and let's use the chess analogy since it's used a lot. I don't feel anybody playing three moves ahead here. It feels very different than that. And a great example is the governor's call for these reforms, as he's calling them. Changes to the Medi-Cal program, which is a health care for low-income people. Changes to in-home health care services, in-home supportive services for the disabled. Changes in CalWORKs, the welfare assistance program. And changes in the pension system for public employees. Now, there has been a humongous PR offensive from the governor's office that these are not new proposals. The Democrats say, well, these are new. You sprung them on us at the 11th hour. The governor's people say, are you kidding us? These are not new. There's truth in both sides, frankly. Right. Some of the social service programs ideas the governor has talked about a fair number of times. The pension idea, while he's cared about pension reform, he hasn't really talked about pension reform in a few years. So that feels relatively new, folks. But all of this, it doesn't feel like a grand design, a grand strategy. And then we've now get into this discussion about, you know, do those proposals even save enough money? And then, but then, in fairness, we've been going 6 weeks. The governor put out some of them several weeks ago. Where has been the discussion about those? I mean, could you not have had a policy discussion in the legislature about them?
But anyway, week or two ago, when these things came out, it did feel like, wait a minute, where did this come from? We were on the heels of an agreement, or at least a partial agreement on some of this. It felt like we were getting close a couple of weeks ago. And then, you know, the weekend before last, we see the pension reform discussion get reintroduced. And it felt like, and that's what I mean about whether or not this is deliberate, it felt like the administration was intentionally trying to delay a larger deal. Now, I have no reason to believe that that's the case. And I don't even have an analysis of why that would be politically prudent, or, you know, what the end game would be to delay a deal. I mean, I frankly, I don't know. It's that level of confusion which I find so unsettling, because if there is no design, if there is no mass conspiracy, then I think the alternative is more troubling, that we're just kind of doing this by the seat of our collective pants, and that, you know, and that Once you get into these little things, you know, you're talking about creating more differences than you are common ground.
And you know, just one other thought on this, which is that if politics is always about this, the art of the possible, or negotiations, or, you know, everybody's got to come out getting something, or, you know, however we would describe the way that politics often works when you get into this kind of thing. Let's talk about the, you know, you're talking about the negotiations that have to happen between the governor and majority Democrats in the legislature. And you look back to February, you know, clearly everybody got something out of that deal. There were spending cuts down to a certain level, but there were tax increases to make up the other part of the difference. Everybody got part of their solution on the table. You know, Democrats believing it needed to be some of this, the governor believing it needed to be some of the other. Well, you get to this one. You know, if the governor wants these changes to these programs, which are, you know, some of them are going to be controversial to Democrats and their core constituents. If the Democrats give him those, just for sake of argument here for a moment, what do they get in exchange? Spending cuts? I mean, that doesn't seem to make any sense. In other words, what's in it for majority Democrats to come to the table and agree on these other than we need to help the state out? In other words, I don't see, if that's what the governor's asking majority Democrats to do, I don't see how they come to that from a political calculation of what works for their constituencies, their interest groups, their philosophy about government.
Well, and it's just the short term. I mean, you know, the easy answer is, well, you get a spending plan in place where, you know, these regional centers that are not getting their payments, the schools that are not getting their money that's owed to them from the state, that the operations of state government, and you can make a case that a lot of these services that government provides benefit Democratic constituencies more than Republican constituencies, and that...
Well, it depends. Are you talking about the people who get a paycheck or the people who are the clients?
Well, but the people who are not receiving their payments now and the vendors who are receiving IOUs, that at least having a plan in place, a spending plan in place where people can be paid in cash instead of registered warrants, that somehow that benefits Democratic constituencies. I mean, look, the Republicans don't have a lot of political clout in terms of numbers in this state, but they are holding a lot of the cards politically because of the way our budget system is set up. And I think that, you know, at some point, on some level, in some way, Democrats are going to have to accept that fact and figure out, you know, a set of priorities about what they're willing to give up. And you know, at what price they're willing to agree to some kind of deal.
Would you agree that the luckiest people right now in this debate are the Republicans in the state Senate? Because they are really under the radar here. I mean, they have often been the focal point of resistance to things more than their colleagues in the Assembly Republicans. They disagreed with Assembly Republicans about the stopgap package. They've never really had a great relationship collectively with Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah. And here Arnold Schwarzenegger is taking all the slings and arrows about the way things went down last week.
Right.
And no one is back talking to Senate Republicans about what else they would do if they didn't want to do X. You know, where's your plan or whatever. You know, the things that we often ask them about. I mean, really, this is an Arnold Schwarzenegger versus the Democrats narrative.
And that's because, unlike the last 2 years, the Senate Republicans are now, depending on how you want to look at it, back on the same page with or doing the bidding of Arnold Schwarzenegger. And this is one of the great mysteries to me.
I was going to say it's baffling.
It's one of the great mysteries to me going through this about why and how Senate Republicans got back on the same page with the governor. Because I don't know. I mean, I can tell you from being there on June 30th when these stopgap measures were being put up for votes, I personally spoke to Republican members of the Senate personally who wanted to put up votes for these bills. They only needed 2 Republican votes to get out. And I talked to Republicans, enough Republicans to move the bills out of committee or off the Senate floor. They wanted to put up those votes and they didn't. And the reason they didn't was because the governor urged them not to. I mean, you'll remember right up till the very end, 9-10 o'clock at night on June 30th, the Republican leader, Dennis Hollingsworth, was down smoking a cigar with the governor down in the smoking tent. And
you were following him.
And they came out of that meeting. Hollingsworth came out of that meeting. And the Senate Republicans' resolve seemed strengthened out of there, and that is sort of maybe that's an insider view of this, but you know, for the last 2 years, undoubtedly the Senate Republicans have been the main thorn in the side, not just of Democrats in the legislature, but of the governor as well.
Right.
And so we saw these bills moved out of the Assembly with a lot of Republican votes. Right, I mean, the Assembly Republican leader Sam Blakesley was on board supporting these stopgap measures to essentially buy us some more time, and they ran into a brick wall in the Senate, and that brick wall was reinforced or perhaps built by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And
he was a bricklayer in his early part of his life.
Maybe
he used to work as a bricklayer.
Well, there you go.
See, I just thought about it when you said it.
So
that was a random factoid. Please keep going.
But it is one of the really perplexing things about it. And this is why I go back and forth about whether this is by design or whether this is just some crazy set of coincidences and circumstances I'm the first to admit I'm too close to the details of this that I'm perhaps I'm missing the big picture here. But I hope to God, I hope there is a big picture. Just, I hope that somebody has a plan, because right now it feels like we're on the verge of falling apart.
Conspiracy or chaos?
Take your pick. I'll take conspiracy every time, although I fear that that's not the case.
Well, we have gone so long. We should wrap up there.
We should say so long.
Though, we should. I want to just give this is a little promo plug here, and this is on behalf of all the folks in public radio.
Every single one.
All of them.
Even Mara Liasson?
But I do. Well, I'm getting to the folks of the network. I was just going to let folks know that that National Public Radio has decided that we are so dysfunctional here in California that next week they have a 10-part series that airs on both in mornings and afternoons called California in Crisis. It's a 10-part series of stories about why California is so screwed up. It'll air during Morning Edition. It'll air during All Things Considered. I think you'll be able to go online at npr.org and find something on it.
Are you doing all these stories?
I'm not. I'm doing one story. I'm doing a story on the governor and the governor's, his role through time and how that has worked and has it worked well or not worked. And you can listen to it next week. I think it airs Wednesday afternoon. But there's a story about California's education system, prisons, healthcare problems in California, pension problems. So if you're really so inclined to live it with America next week.
Wonk out.
Wonk out on National Public Radio. So and I'll put some links up on the blog next week about how you can listen to some of that. So they are joining us in our misery, at least for a little while.
Welcome to the party. Ina Jaffe. No, Ina's here.
Ina's in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant by here. Yeah. California.
Yeah. And I know we've already gone way too long. You want to talk about how you saw the governor on the beach in Malibu?
No.
On the 4th?
No.
You want to just read it in Capital
Weekly? I saw the governor on the beach in Malibu on the 4th. You can read about it in Capital Weekly.
CapitalWeekly.net. I was going to give you a chance.
With an O.
Yeah.
We're
already at like 30.
What can I say? I was sitting there. I was drinking a cocktail, and there came the governor.
Yeah. We were already 31 minutes.
Okay.
I think we need to say goodnight.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
All right. We'll see you next time. For Anthony York, I'm John Myers. See you next time.